You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday. Take heart. Weekend is upon us. It's November 11th. A special thank you to all of our veterans, those who have served in our armed forces, both living and dead, who have protected and defended and pursued our liberties throughout the world. St. Martin of Tours, on this feast day, we ask for your prayers for all of our veterans and for all those who are serving in our armed forces, those who are in harm's way, and their families who love them, and we give you thanks. So, St. Martin of Tours, pray for us. St. Martin, the first bishop and confessor honored by the church in the West, a principal apostle of Gaul. So we'll talk a little bit more about maybe St. Martin of Tours a little bit later. Some guests on the program today at the bottom of the hour. My good friend Alan Alday will be here. Alan, who is a certified behavior analyst and also professor at the University of Kentucky, besides his work with students and grad students there. He also does a lot of work in public schools in helping teachers and parents with significant behavior issues in children. He's not a therapist, doesn't purport to be, but he deals strictly in the realm of behavior theory, and particularly the understanding that behaviors impact each other within the classroom, within family life, and oftentimes it's the behavior of the parents that can be the issue as opposed to the behavior of the child. And so we'll talk to him today. He's got a great topic he's come up with. It's got me very, very curious. And that is parenting teenagers, of which I still have a few. Parenting teenagers via the song The Gambler. You know, I mean, if you're my age, that you know that song like the back of your hand, kind of like The Devil Went Down to Georgia, right? On a warm summer's evening. I don't have that Kenny Rogers gravelly throat, right? You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. So I got to look forward to finding out what that's about from my friend Alan Alday. And then in the second hour, finally catching up with Timothy Stanley. Timothy, who is a British historian and journalist. He writes for the Daily Telegraph. He has been a regular on CNN in terms of on television. Catholic mind, someone who's been through his own journey into the Catholic faith, which we've talked about on the program before. But he actually accompanied the Trump campaign on the last few days leading up to the election and was there at the Trump victory party the night of the shocking turn of events on Tuesday. Interestingly enough, of course, Tim Stanley had a front row seat for the Brexit vote over in his native Great Britain. And he had a front row seat, in a sense, for the surprising Trump victory. Two of the probably most surprising political phenomenon of recent decades. So we'll get his perspective on that. I know he's written a piece in the Telegraph of, why the positives that could come out of a Trump presidency. So believe me, I'm all ears. We'll consider this part two of my therapy session after my that time with Father Alan yesterday. As I've said before, I was going to be depressed no matter what the result of this election. But in each depression has its own particular shade. So, you know, I do have some concerns certainly going forward, but hopefully Tim Stanley can help me with those with a historical perspective. That's the good thing about historians. You know, there's really nothing new under the sun, and they have a way of kind of putting it within its proper context. We certainly welcome your calls anytime during the show today. If there's a question you have, maybe even a parenting question that you want me to run by Dr. Alday, I'd be happy to do it. 573-4BREAD-4 is the number to call or text. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. We'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. I said today, the feast day of St. Martin of Tours, also Veterans Day. Going back to the old Armistice Day, which was the signing of the end of hostilities, which what was known then and would be known as the Great War. Little did we know, just a couple of decades later, the world would be pulled into war of even more colossal scale, particularly in Europe and in the Pacific theater. But the Great War was, the armistice was to be signed at the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month. And it seems like I've looked this up before. Maybe I need to do a little bit more research. I'm wondering, you know, St. Martin of Tours was, you know, you just got to go back to the day in which the Christian faith was much more of an animating presence in Europe than it is today. St. Martin of Tours, much a shared saint throughout all of Europe. You have to wonder if Martin of Tours, who is a patron saint of soldiers, he himself having been a soldier, if that feast day was chosen for that very reason. So St. Martin of Tours, pray for us, not only for the hostilities without our national borders, but even the hostilities that are going on within our national borders, protests, and all the rest. Some other things we'll talk about on the show today, the many faces of elitism, a winner in Tampa Bay, and the overlooked downside of post-election civility. Today's gospel reading, taken from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 17, verses 26 through 37, Jesus said to his disciples, "As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the days of the Son of Man." You know, we're in this liturgical year, and we are coming toward the end of the liturgical year. And in the Catholic understanding, the calendar is always a teacher. As we've said before, there's not only the cyclical liturgical calendar that renews itself every week, oriented around the day of resurrection and this seven-day rhythm oriented around Sabbath rest and worship written into creation from the very beginning. But we also have the liturgical year. And, you know, as Carly Simon once sang, it's coming around again. I mean, this is I'm dating myself there. And anyway, we come around and now we're coming up to the end of the liturgical year. And it's in many ways sort of patterned after a human life. It's funny how that is, you know, in Catholic prayer, for example, things like the Liturgy of the Hour, the Divine Office, there's this cyclical nature even to a day, to where morning prayer is like a human, or the day is like a human life. So you've got morning prayer, which is like birth. You've got night prayer, which is like death. Even the prayers are oriented around that, an opportunity for examination. Well, if we look at the liturgical year that way, it's like a life. You begin with Advent, of course, and the coming of our Lord. And when we get toward the end of the liturgical year, like we are now, a week from Sunday will be the solemnity of Jesus Christ, King of the universe. We start contemplating the end of all things, not simply the end of human life, which we'll all have our own particular apocalypse at the end of our life, but the end of human history. And so the readings began to be oriented that way. Yesterday, we heard Jesus' admonition, you know, don't look here, there, and wherever for the kingdom of God is within you. For just as lightning flashes and lights up the sky from one side to the other, so will the Son of Man be in his day. At first, he must suffer greatly and be rejected by this generation. So there was the first coming. There will be the second coming, not in the humility of Bethlehem stable, but of course, in power, glory. And when, power and glory, when will that be? Believe me, people have tried to sell their books and set their dates. Forget who the most recent one was, of when the coming of the Son of Man would be. We do not know, but we do know this about it, the day's gospel reading, as I said, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be on the day of the Son of Man. They were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. Similarly, as it was in the days of Lot, they were eating, drinking, buying, selling, planting, building. On the day when Lot left Sodom, fire and brimstone rained from the sky to destroy them all.
so it will be on the day the Son of Man is revealed. On that day, a person on his housetop and whose belongings are in his house must not go down to get them, and likewise a person in the field must not return to what was left behind. Remember the wife of Lot. Yeah, I heard she was a little salty. Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it, but whoever loses it will save it. I tell you, on their night, there will be two people in bed. One will be taken, the other left. Two women grinding meal together. One will be taken, the other left. Sort of an ominous vision, honestly. And the best thing we can do is not to sit around on our hands, but to be at work, to be prepared in deeds and in heart for when that day may come. I always equate the days of Noah, what it must have been like for those within earshot of Noah's construction project, this building of an enormous ark as depicted in Genesis 6 and 7, what it must have been like to hear that hammer. You know, I live in a house where lots of people get up early. My children's alarms sometimes go off, and if they're spending the night with someone else, they've forgotten about it, or maybe they don't even hear it. You just hear that alarm. After a while, you have a tendency to tune it out. I think about those who lived near Noah, who heard him pounding on that ark day after day after day, and eventually tuned out the sound of the hammer. That was a big mistake. That hammer was an alarm. We've got them all around us. Get ready. Are we ready? Let's give God our whole hearts. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Friday, November 11th, here on Breadbox Media. Check out breadboxmedia.com if you want more information or how to get the app that will let you carry around great radio in your pocket on your digital device, whether it's an iPhone or whether it's an Android device. We got you covered. Check it out at breadboxmedia.com. You can also listen to podcasts. I know you youngsters, you like you listening to your podcasts. Who was that voice? I don't even know who that sounded like. Anyway, it's early. But check it out. You can listen to podcasts through iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean. Subscribe to your favorite. Listen to new shows. All the rest. We got great weekend shows, daily shows, all the rest. You can also become a supporter of your favorite show. Become a so-called friend of the show. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Would love to have your friendship and support. For sure. Yeah, my question of the day today, I missed this yesterday, was the 26th anniversary of the premiere of the movie Home Alone. Boy, that seems like an age ago. You know, young Macaulay Culkin, Catherine O'Hara, and others. Joe Pesci, of course, Daniel Stern. Still a great Christmas time movie. So, of course, that was really, in many ways, the heyday of director John Hughes, who probably owned the 80s like very few directors. Anyway, so my question of the day is, what is your favorite John Hughes film? There tend to be a lot of commonalities. Most of his were set in Chicago. He obviously a Chicagoan. I saw on Newsday a ranking of his 10 best movies, but you're free to chime in. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I'll give you John Hughes' 10 best movies ranked. This from
newsday.com. And this will give you an idea of just how much Mr. Hughes owned the 80s. Number 10, Some Kind of Wonderful. This was a really at the tail end of the Brat Pack phenomenon. You had Eric Stoltz, Leah Thompson, and let's see, Mary Stuart Masterton. There we go. Number 9, Weird Science. That movie never did a lot for me, but here they've got it coming in at number 9. Number 8, Home Alone. Still a very good movie, funny movie. Keep the Change, You Filthy Animal. Number 7, National Lampoon's Vacation, which I did not know was a John Hughes film. Pure comic genius, that one, in my opinion, and still the best of the vacation franchise. Number 6, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Now, that'd give you an idea of how much the man owned the 80s if Ferris Bueller comes in at number 6 in their ranking. Number 5, 16 Candles. Anthony Michael Hall, Molly Ringwald. Let's see, number 4, that was also the Cusack sister and brother, Joan and John, one of their very first films. Number 4, Pretty in Pink, a movie I still have not seen to this day. Number 3, Mr. Mom. Yes. Wow, I didn't know Hughes did that when Michael Keaton and Terry Garr, who was really, I think, one of the great comedic actresses of the 80s. Loved her in Tootsie. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, number 2. Yes, one of my wife and I's guilty pleasures, Steve Martin, John Candy. And number 1, The Breakfast Club. Not only for being a great movie, of course. Certainly the family-friendly film you may think it is. If you go back and watch it again, it may have been a while, but that movie was its own sort of sociological window, wasn't it, into high school life back in the 80s, and of course spawned Simple Minds' very successful hit, Don't You Forget About Me. So that's 10, but he had many more. But man, the guy owned the 80s. What's he doing now? I don't even know. 573-4BREAD-4. You can chime in with a question or a comment, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I'll share some of the responses I've gotten on Facebook a little bit later. So let's see. Sports-wise, NBA in action last night. Golden State winning again, winning big at Denver. They seem to have their mojo. The Lakers winning at Sacramento. I'm telling you, this young Adam Walton coaching career is looking pretty impressive so far. You know, if you recall last year with Steve Kerr out, I'm not Adam Walton, Luke Walton. If you remember last year, Steve Kerr out for a long while with his back issues, and it was Luke Walton who, I think he has a brother, Adam. I could be wrong about that, but he coached Golden State through their incredible start and through most of their season. It was Steve Kerr at the helm when they blew that 3-1 lead to the Cavaliers. So who knows, maybe the Lakers came out pretty good on that deal. Anyway, so they beat the Kings with a little rumble at the end between two former University of Kentucky players, Julius Randle and DeMarcus Cousins. Of course, I mean, DeMarcus Cousins would rumble with his mother if she got between him and the hoop. So I guess no real surprise there. College football last night, I think you had North Carolina and Duke squaring off. Not exactly the stuff that keeps the eyes of the nation peeled, but Duke did get a win last night over North Carolina, 28-27 there at Duke's home field. Utah with a big win over Arizona State. Let's see. Let's look down and see what the matchups are coming up this weekend in college football, whether there are any top 10 matchups. I guess you've got Baylor at Oklahoma. That's a pretty big game, though a little bit of the shine is off Baylor's star. West Virginia at Texas. That's a game, if Charlie Strong has any hope left of saving his job, which I'm not sure he does, a home win over the Mountaineers there in Austin would go wonders, would do wonders for him. Let's scroll on down a little bit. I'm not seeing right now any big top 10 matchups going on this weekend. LSU at Arkansas. Let's see. And USC at Washington. That could be interesting. I'm not sure where. Alex, you know where game day is going to be this weekend? No idea. I'm not seeing any huge games. It may be Washington for that USC-Washington game, which if anybody's going to stop the Husky train, I guess you think maybe USC would have the opportunity. I'd say a cool story that that I came across yesterday. I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, as I've made clear. Yes, I suffer. I don't suffer like the Browns suffer, okay? Now 0-10 after their loss last night to the Ravens. Got to be a bitter pill to swallow since the Ravens used to be the Browns and all that stuff, right? But there was a, as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, we did get our Super Bowl. But by and large, you know, the patches of success have been as random as few as the patches of blue in that electoral map, if you've ever seen it done by county, for example. But here was something positive, and it really has nothing to do with what happens on the football field. The story from ESPN.com, Buccaneer Pro Bowl defensive tackle Gerald McCoy had one request Thursday. Pray. Why? Last week, his home was broken into just a few hours before the Bucs Thursday night football game. McCoy also had a message for the person who did it. I forgive you. He said, I would just ask that people pray for the kid who tried to break into my house, said McCoy, who wasn't home when the incident occurred. He said, just a lost kid. He probably just needs some guidance. Ain't nothing to be upset over. It happens. His father, 59-year-old Gerald Sr., was home during the incident, suffered a broken wrist when confronting the burglar, who was identified as Justin J. Frazier, a 17-year-old runaway with arrest warrants in Hillsborough County and Polk County in Florida. Just a lost kid, said McCoy, father of four. After a scuffle with McCoy Sr., Frazier led on foot, leaving behind a backpack and an Xbox taken from McCoy's home. He was later found by police hiding inside a neighbor's home. He was arrested and charged with armed burglary of an occupied dwelling. So, I mean, this is a serious crime. But for to see Gerald McCoy to extend such grace and mercy to a kid who just violated his residence, hurt his father, it's really pretty remarkable. He said maybe it was supposed to happen that way. He said he may even visit the teen in hopes that he can help him. Maybe it was supposed to happen that way, McCoy said. Maybe he was supposed to break into my house. I forgive him. I'm going to pick back up on that later in the show because I think it has some application to some of the things that we've been talking about regarding the election. Really quick, just for fun, we're going to have Alan Alday here in a few minutes. Let's give away our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day, spanning the globe as we are wont to do. How about the guy, the motorcyclist who eluded cops at 165 miles an hour in New Jersey? That's hard to imagine. That must have been unbelievable rush. Stopped, of course, when he ran out of gas. A motorcyclist from New Jersey who fled from New York State Police of more than 165 miles an hour was arrested after stopping for gas on Saturday morning. I guess that's not as bad as the guy who pulled in the In-N-Out Burger drive-thru while he was in pursuit. But, don't get in a police chase with authorities if you are low on gas. Our second nominee I'm going to give to the people in my family who keep buying bubblegum-flavored toothpaste. I don't see the point. I don't like it. I don't like the aftertaste. So come on, family members. I'm not saying who it is, not pointing fingers, but what were you thinking? But the winner of our What Were You Thinking Award, I'm going to give to all those people sending out memes about getting rid of the Electoral College because of the idea that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Well, you know, folks, the Electoral College was put into place exactly for the situation that it provided this time, to keep the urban majorities from dominating the rural minorities. So you might want to pick a different time to start your non-electoral college campaign. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're
right at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show on this Friday, November 11th. On this Veterans Day and the feast day of St. Martin of Tours, blessed to have in the studio with me Dr. Allen Alday. Allen, a good friend and a professor at the University of Kentucky, a certified behavior analyst. He comes on every couple of weeks. We talk about issues related to behaviors, both child and adults, whether that's in the family, whether it's in the classroom, wherever. So good morning, Allen. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, good morning, Mike.
Doing well?
Yeah, doing okay.
End of the week?
The end of the thing. Yeah, I'm glad this is the end of the week. It's been a long week this week.
How's the littlest yet unseen all day?
I think doing pretty well. All the all-day clan, with the exception of me, is in Alabama right now.
So. Oh, wow. So you're batching it.
I am, and I've been working a lot. So I'll be glad when they get back so I can, you know, get back to my normal schedule. Just too much work.
There you go.
It's not good for you, I don't think. So, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and I mean, with it being Veterans Day, so thank you to all the veterans. I mean, and especially to their families as well, because my grandfather was in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam.
Really?
So I know
wow.
That the family suffer as well.
So he was career military?
He was career military, yeah. So I appreciate all that they've done. And I believe it was originally Armistice Day.
Yes,
From end of World War I. So anyway, so thank you.
That was back when I was young, Armistice Day,
yeah.
You know.
I was a wee lad back then.
And your Auburn Tigers keep on winning. So setting up a showdown for the Iron Bowl. Is it like the day after Thanksgiving or something? Or
I think that's right. It's mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm sure if there's Auburn fans listening, they're gonna say what a sellout he is. But I mean, you know, I mean, it's kind of like going whenever the lottery's over $1 billion and like I'm gonna win this one for sure.
You're not optimistic?
No, not if they were playing in Auburn, I'd be more optimistic.
There you go.
But you know, I'm trying to be realistic, and given the fact that, you know, they probably weren't supposed to do what they've done this year. I mean, you know, that I think they've exceeded expectation.
There you go.
And sometimes you have to be satisfied with
that. Look at that perspective. And that's what we need these days with this election. You're at a university community. Has it been kind of crazy since the shocking results?
You know, I think people have had certainly, you know, emotional reactions to it. And I think that's the thing that's always beautiful to me is perspective. And, you know, no matter who you vote for, that's the beauty of our democracy, our democratic republic, I guess. But that this is what we do. And I just think it is a beautiful thing to see the peaceful transfer of power from one polar opposite person to another polar opposite person. And that peaceful transfer of power is, I think, one of the things that make our country such a blessing to live in. And, you know, and I understand people getting upset because their person lost, but, you know, it's, you know, we've got to work together.
Helps to be Catholic too. You know, we have a perspective about in terms of, I mean, not saying that political processes don't matter. Of course they do, but we do have an ultimate authority to whom we owe our allegiance and our accountability.
Well, and I think that's been something that's helped me through the entire, you know, the entire 4 years of this past election cycle, because that's what, you know, that's pretty much what it is. I mean, I'm sure they're already talking about 2020 already. Who's right. going to go, you know?
Right.
But I mean, it is something that I think has helped me, you know, through real, not obviously through the whole election cycle, but over the last 2 years has, you know, really helped me to rethink how I think about different issues, and to help me to rethink how I think about, you know, just the whole process. I mean, it's, you know, because historically for me personally, I was never really anti-death penalty. I mean, I was like, yeah, that's probably what they need. And, you know, and certainly becoming Catholic has helped me to change. I mean, you can't hardly be pro-life without being pro-life, you know. I mean, so you should always be pro-life, you know. But I don't know. It's definitely changed my perspective a lot, being Catholic.
That's good. We look at politics through the lens of our faith instead of our faith through the lens of we try to, and we're not always, certainly. Well, we're all a work in progress.
And that's the beautiful thing. And I wish everyone in our country does not take the belief that you know, certainly that Catholics take or even that Christians take. But you know, I wish everyone would take the approach of no matter who wins, we should be praying for them. I mean, you know,
right.
If it would have been Hillary, we should be praying for her. If it had been Trump, if it's Trump, we need to be praying for him. And, you know, because we know,
right.
That works. And that's what we all should be doing. And that's my intention. And instead of being mad or being upset or being anything else, I'm just going to pray. I mean, you know, without ceasing. I think a wise man said that once.
That's right. He also said, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, make your requests known to God.
So. Right. And, you know, and we do have a lot of issues facing our country. And, you know, and I hope we can come together and go forward. I mean, we do need to work together.
Mm. Well, we can always come together around our common love for country music.
That's right.
And
yeah.
So I was really excited when I heard what your topic or theme was today. We're brushing off a little bit, going back to probably the 70s, late 70s, early 80s maybe. Kenny Rogers,
yeah,
the silver-haired wonder before he messed his face up.
Yeah, exactly.
the Gambler, which,
right.
I mean, probably maybe next to The Devil Went Down to Georgia, one of those songs that everybody knows. At least the chorus,
right?
You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, and so forth.
Right.
I won't make the listeners suffer by trying to sing it like Kenny, but
well, you know, and you know, I was thinking about this, and you know, and of course, you know, my wife, who's always my source of reason, you know, I was.
So she's out of town. She couldn't check you on this one.
That's right.
You're on your own.
I told her what I was gonna do. She said, "Oh my gracious!" But I did. I got to thinking about this because I've had several parents of teenagers, you know, say to me, you know, oh, we just go back and forth, and we just like to argue a lot, and I. And, you know, so for full disclosure, I don't have a teenager yet. I've worked with lots of teenagers, but I don't have a teenager of my own, so.
That's probably why you sound relatively coherent. I'm surprised teen parents are talking to you and not just catatonic.
So, you know, the good thing is that this is recorded and I can go back.
Yeah, that's right.
I can go back in 10 years and be like, now what was that? I said? Oh, yeah, taking your own advice is always a hard thing. You know, I'm a great hypocrite when it comes to this as I still struggle myself. But
Solomon as a teenager, I look forward to that. What a great kid, man. What a great kid.
Well, he's not the one I'm worried about. it's the one that moons people at, you know, at the grocery store is the one I'm concerned with. So, and this is not even as a teenager. So this is still as a 3-year-old. So,
well, that's good. I mean, if they're mooning, you definitely want it to be a 3-year-old and not a 17-year-old. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes we do that as males whenever we are 17. So one of the many.
I played the fifth.
Yeah, I better stop. I'm about to get into confession here. So I don't know that you can absolve me. So. But anyway, I got to thinking about this, and I thought, what, you know, this parent was talking to me about this. Oh, you know, my kid just argues with me about everything, and I just, you know, we go back and forth, and I thought, you know, sometimes you got to know, you know, sometimes you got to kind of know when to be quiet and know when to walk away, and heck, sometimes you need to know when to run. And I was like, wait a minute, that's the Gambler.
There you go.
That's great. Kenny Rogers, he's already answered our question of what do we need to do about.
I mean, I think country music answers all of our major questions in life.
Yeah. Many of them they do.
Many of them. I'm not sure the answer is always that constructive, but no, in this case, so interesting. So you're in an argument with your teenager, right? You're in this pattern, because we've talked a lot on the program about sort of patterns we get into and trying to have enough awareness when we're beginning to go down, or even post event or drama, saying, you know, what are the things that the sort of signposts along the way where we can choose something different. So, you know, sometimes you have to. Is this similar, would you say, to the idea that you kind of got to pick your battles?
Well, I would say it is very similar to that. You know, and as we've talked about before, I mean, this is what you just said is exactly right. We know as adults, we see a red light to stop. We know to see a green light to go. And that's very obvious. But even in our social interactions, we see the same thing. Whenever my teenager says, "I hate you, Mom," and then you say, "Wow," and then they say this, then you say this, and it escalates to a point where everybody slams doors, and then you're like, okay, well, that didn't work again.
In the words of Ron Burgundy, that escalated quickly.
and it's predictable. It's just as predictable for us as the, you know, as the adults, and we get used to that, and we like that because it's, we know, I say this, you say this, I say this, we slam doors, there we go. We're done. And then I say, I'm sorry. You say, I'm sorry. And then we start over again at the next time. And so this is one of those times that I think, again, it comes back to us, you know, talking to us as adults and, you know, and how can we change our behavior? So I'm hoping to kind of walk through just the chorus of this and to say, here's what we've got.
That sounds great. I mean, we're the ones supposedly with the frontal lobes that are more fully developed. So
let me know how that's working out. Not working out for me very well.
We'll be back with my good friend Alan Alday, behavior analyst, professor. If you got a question or a comment regarding parenting at any age or a behavior issue in the home or the classroom, 573-4BREAD-4. Call or text or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We'll be back. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this feast day of St. Martin of Tours, also Veterans Day. Thanks to all the veterans out there, living and dead, who have served the cause of freedom and for their families. I'm here with my good friend, Dr. Alan Alday, here in the studio. We're talking, as we do every couple of weeks, about behavior issues, whether it's in the family or in the classroom, parenting, child, teacher, all the rest. If you've got a question or comment, 573-4BREAD-4, you can email me. MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Asking a question. 26 years ago this week, Home Alone premiered. So I'm asking, what's your favorite John Hughes film? You know, he kind of ruled the 80s. Pretty in Pink, you know, Home Alone, Breakfast Club, National Lampoon's Vacation, and so forth.
You know,
The Breakfast Club. Did I say that already?
Yeah. You know, I think that although I would probably never let my children watch the movie. Vacation is kind of hard to beat. I never let them watch it though. But they may, whenever they get older and out of my house, they can watch it. But it was, you know, just
the Griswold family vacation.
Good talk, Russ. Good talk.
That's right. Dad, you must have jumped that car 50 yards. Nothing to brag about, son. 50 yards. A classic, and of course, Cousin Eddie. That's, you know.
Oh, you know, it's, and of course, I mean, I always think about as we're coming approaching Christmas quickly. Christmas Vacation, and you know, that's a good one. It's the gift that keeps on giving, Clark.
All year round. That reminds me, I need to get you renew your membership in the Jelly of the Month Club. We'll get that straightened out. Anyway, so we're going to walk through. You're saying that there's really good parenting insight. Mm-hmm. In the great Kenny Rogers song, The Gambler, that everybody knows. And you want to walk through the chorus as a guide for parents who may be at their wit's end with their teen son or daughter.
Right. You know, so as you get into these, you know, basically, they essentially are power struggles with your teenager. You know, you've got the likelihood of changing their behavior is not as high as changing yours. So one of the things that's the hardest to do is for us to zip it, you know, whenever they start, and us to say nothing. I mean, that's a very difficult thing to do.
So, a lot of pride involved there. I mean, to be quite honest. You know, we want respect. We feel like we deserve respect. And so to hold our tongue is hard.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and you probably weren't raised that way. I mean, I've heard several people say, oh, my parents never praised me. They just, you know, and you can, you know, you can rule by fear. I mean, you know, or you can rule by not fear. I mean, but ruling by fear works. I mean, we saw communism.
Sure.
You know, I mean, people didn't say, oh, no, Stalin, I disagree. I mean, they're like, yes, sir. That's a great idea. You know, I mean, and I'm not, of course, equating parents to Stalin. So don't nobody get upset over that. I'm just saying, you know, but it is. I mean, my parents ruled me by fear and it worked. But at the same time, I mean, there's a balance. I mean, there's a time you need to make your child fearful, and then, but on the everyday kind of stuff, we don't need to do that. And so you got to think about, you know, in the song it says, you know, you've got to know when to hold them, and I'd say that you got to know when to hold your tongue. I mean, whenever your kid says whatever it is that starts that cycle, you know, they just gave you the green light to go. You know, you got to know when you need to hold your tongue. And there's many times that we do. I mean, there's a lot of unnecessary arguments that occur. And, you know, and so, of course, I'm in classrooms more than I'm in houses, of course. I see this in the classroom a lot. And so I'm assuming it also translates over
Sure.
to people's homes, that there's unnecessary times that teachers will say things back to a kid when they should just kind of move on.
And make your point, and then that's you've made it clear, and there's no reason to get into back and forth. In a sense, it almost validates, you know, their protest.
Right, yeah. Well, and it does. And, you know, because what you're going to do is you're changing the rhythm of what we know. And whenever you change it as the parent, you know, and you hold your tongue, it's going to cause them to even have like a look like, what in the world was that? And then, you know, you may get them to be louder. I mean, it's not necessarily means it's going to go away. It may get
right,
a little
sure.
bit worse because you've just changed what we know. I mean, it's like when you come up to a stoplight and it's flashing. Everybody kind of stops and like, okay, what do we do now? Like, oh yeah, it's a four-way stop now. Because, you know, you have to think about it. Because
right.
it's what you always know is different. So sometimes you do have to know when to hold them, hold your tongue. Sometimes you have to know when to fold them. I'd say, you know, with that, kind of keeping your hands and your arms and your, you know, extremities more in a calm position. Because I know for me, I raise my hands when I get mad. I'm like, you know, and which, I mean, nobody can see me other than you, Mike, but you can imagine, you know, we talk with our hands when we get angry. And sometimes if you just, one of the things I learned as a teacher and as a behavior analyst is when a kid is escalated, one of the worst things you can do is talk with your hands.
Really?
Know? Yeah, because, you know, we begin to think more primitively whenever we're angry. We don't really think, we definitely don't use our frontal lobe whenever we're angry. And so one of the things I always do is I just kind of cross my hands and leave them in front of me, like, you know, just down by my side, because, you know, so sometimes you do have to just know when to fold them. You know, knowing when to walk away is the hard part. But as we've talked about before on here, if you can just turn your back and walk away, that signals that the conversation is over. But as long as you stay turned towards the person, that signals that the conversation can keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is, and it's really an interesting thing, because I used to train people to de-escalate, you know, pretty aggressive situations. And what we naturally do as people is we begin to square up shoulder to shoulder with the person that is our adversary, whether they are our child or they're another person. We, you know, and that's a bad sign, because, you know, whenever you square up shoulder to shoulder with somebody, that signals aggression. But whenever you either turn sideways or you just turn and walk away, you know, then that is, you know, that signals that this is over. I mean, that we're not doing that, because nonverbal behavior is really a better predictor than verbal behavior. And then sometimes you have to know when to run. You know, and I think if, you know, for me, if you have your one thing, we all have our one thing. If somebody says this to us, it makes us just livid. And whenever that happens, that's probably the time you need to run, because you know you're going to say something you regret. You know you're going to get you know, you're going to get on, just keep going.
We know when it, maybe in our, with our spouse or with our child, when we live in the home with someone, we're with someone, we all know what that button is each other. And sometimes we're anxious to push it.
Oh, I mean, I'm just like, I can't wait. Just, I dare you to say something. Oh, how about this? Boom, you know, and you get to see everybody get mad. And you're like, wow, that's kind of fun. I mean, I remember a kid, eighth grader, I was working with once. And I mean, had some really colorful things that he would say. And I'm like, why do you do that? You know? And he said, it's fun to watch him get mad. And I was like, yeah, well, there, you know. I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, I'm sure it is fun. He said, oh, and some of them get really mad. And I'm like, yeah, that's good. So, you know.
It's like when you say to your spouse, you're acting just like your mother.
Oh, no. That's the time when you need to run for other reasons.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so the whole you never count your money. I mean, I think that's one of the things, you know, think about what he's talking about is, you know, as you're winning, you don't sit there and count your money. And as parents, we always kind of have I can't even use this statement anymore, the Trump card.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I guess you can't use that anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly
but
right.
We always have,
pun intended.
We always have that. We always have that. I mean, as parents,
right.
we can always pull the last, and we're going to win the argument,
right?
You know, and we don't want to sit there and know that. I mean, you know, because not that it's about winning or losing, but it's, you know, we shouldn't sit there and count our money. Like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to make you do what, you know, that's not always a good thing. You know, of course, when you're sitting at the table, we'll skip that with that part. But then there'll be time enough for counting when the deal is done. And I think that's one of the things of, you know, whenever it's all over and done with, I mean, what I would say to you is just always think back on the whole situation and look back on it. And of course, you know, this is not necessarily a behavior analytic strategy to mm-hmm. be reflective, but it is. I mean, because what we do as behavior analysts, we look at what we call what happens before a behavior, the behavior itself, and what happens after the behavior, and we look at how can we change that.
Mm. And so, like an examination of conscience in many ways.
Yeah. Kind of like that. Yeah. And so what we look at is, you know, so what happened before? You know, what they said this. What did I do? Okay, I did this, and how did that turn out? How did that work for me? You know, not real well. So how could I? What could I? At what point could I change that in the future? So at what point do I need to, okay, they say this, I need to hold them, okay? They say this, I need to just walk away. Mm-hmm. You know, they say this one particular thing, I just need to run away. All right, and as you hold them, fold them, walk away or run, always look at what happens to the behavior. Do you begin to notice less of it? Do you begin to see your child, you know, calming down faster? I didn't mean they're going to calm down immediately, but are they calming down faster? And that's what you want to look for, you know, by doing this. Because, you know, if you have a teenager, they didn't get that way overnight, and they're not going to change overnight. You know, y'all have, you know, at least 13 years of experience doing this, and you can't expect it to end in one day.
I think this has all the promise of a co-written book with Kenny Rogers.
You know, maybe I'll cook chicken with him instead.
There you go. Think about the marketing. But no, really, really good, Alan. I like the very creative. And it gives me an excuse to go listen to The Gambler again. So that's good.
Not that you needed an excuse for that, right?
Blessings to you and to your family. And hope you have a great Thanksgiving. And hopefully we'll see you as soon as that's over.
Yeah,
and continue to pray for you and your family. And
thanks.
Little all day percolating along.
That's right. Thanks. And your families too.
All right. Blessings to you, Carrie, if you're here. We'll be back in a minute with more. This is The Mike Allen Show.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.